This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
And we are bringing you a very special edition of Conversations this month. Every day for an hour, we will be talking to our Power Women Conversations. And my first guest is Charlotte Lobe, somebody that I've enjoyed knowing, in fact, over the years, watching her path in leadership grow and just her commitment to our country to tell the truth. And she's now the Acting Chief Operations Officer at the Department of International Relations and Cooperation. And we're just going to get to know her a bit, and at some point later during the show, for these conversations, we are going to introduce what we call quick fire questions, about 10 quick fire questions, where we literally do a marathon run with our guests to get to know them better, their aspirations and what they think about the country, but also just some of the, you know, nice life problems that they may have or things that they like. Also, Charlotte, good morning and welcome to Power Talk.
Good morning, my brother Lukona, and good morning to your listeners. And I am pleased to be on your program today.
Thank you so much for making the time. It's been quite a while not hearing from you, but I know that you are in good spirits because I always see your work and it lives on our socials and all of that. I'm like, you're doing well. Perhaps just as a starting point, I mean, DELCO sometimes, you know, can be a misunderstood institution that we only think of it as this institution that sends ambassadors across the world and people go live nicely in different countries and kept by the state and so on. But in your role as, you know, now Acting Chief Operations Officer of that department, I know, I'm sure there's much more happening in the world of diplomacy rather than just sending ambassadors. Perhaps maybe take us through first and foremost, what is it that you do and why is it so important for the country?
Thank you very much for the question, Lukona. As the Acting Chief Operations Officer, I am responsible for operational matters of the department. This, amongst others, includes making sure that people who work in our department are safe. I'm responsible for issues like that. I am responsible for transformation issues, which, amongst others, includes issues of gender equality and women's empowerment, issues of youth development, issues of disability management in the department. But I'm also responsible for trade and investment promotions. I'm responsible for coordination of that work within the department and amongst government departments and other stakeholders outside of government. I am also responsible for strategic management in the department, which includes issues of our reporting and planning obligations and ensuring that the department performs optimally at all levels. So in a nutshell, those are the duties that I am responsible for. But talking about the department is responsible for building, first and foremost, a better South Africa, building a better Africa, and building a better world. We do this by ensuring that the national interests of South Africa are always taken on board when we engage in platforms in the continent, when we engage bilaterally with our sister governments in the continent, but we also do this in other platforms globally, like in the UN, where we represent South Africa in various platforms, whether it's in the Human Rights Council in Geneva or it's in the UN headquarters, where South Africa is represented through our departments in engagements at those levels. So our work really is making sure that as we represent South Africa abroad, but the most important part is to make our representation abroad more meaningful to what South Africa needs to look like by ensuring that in our interaction, South Africa is first. In our interaction, we make sure that the interest of South Africa, amongst others, that of fighting or tackling the triple challenge of poverty, unemployment, and inequality is taken care of in the environment where we represent South Africa.
You know, I'm just listening at all those issues you are tackling and the responsibilities that you hold, and I'm thinking, my goodness, you must have quite a well-oiled machine. And as a leader, how do you ensure that, you know, that team keeps beating at the tempo that you require it for you to be able to fulfill all these responsibilities that are so important, not just to the department, but to the foreign policy agenda of the country, but as you are saying, making sure that South Africa comes out well, builds its relationships in the continent and across the world?
Well, I am fortunate in the sense that I work with a team of very professional diplomats who understand that the country comes first. But I am also fortunate in the sense that since I have started acting as Chief Operations Officer, I've worked under the leadership of Minister Sisulu, I've worked under the leadership of Minister Pandor, and both of them are women whose interest is building South Africa, but whose interest is ensuring that they empower other young women or women in the sectors where they operate. So, for instance, Minister Pandor could have well said when she came in 2019 that, okay, I'm having my own acting COO, but she continued trusting in my leadership and sometimes giving me very difficult tasks to perform, but holding my hand all the time to ensure that those tasks are performed, they are performed on time, and the quality of work defines the person that my minister is all about.
I mean, Sis Charlotte, the diplomatic space is definitely one where, you know, there's been a great deal of male dominance in it, and even if you, you know, take a cursory look at ambassadorships, but that face is changing, certainly for our country. I've been seeing a lot more women ambassadors taking up space and not just being deployed. I mean, there is also that, we'll talk about that question actually, whether is there an insignificant deployment over others. We've seen people being moved from one country to the next, and some say it's a downgrade and all of that. But just as a woman in the diplomacy space, how difficult has it been for you to navigate? You've been there for a while now. I'll talk about some of your work with the Gertrude Schoppe Women Mediators Network. You've been there for a while now, and how has that been for you as a woman? Because we have seen a lot of, when we talk diplomacy, generally the names that come up are those of men.
Well, truth be told, the world of diplomacy is male-dominated. And when a woman is given space to occupy certain positions, it's about her ensuring that it is not only about Charlotte Lobby, but it's about other women and making sure that the system understands that there are capable women who are capable to do the work. And I have learned from people who came before me, and just thinking loudly, people like Ambassador Mkwakato Diseko, who was part of the few group of people who were taken to the department in 1994. And through them, I think I have seen myself and I have seen that it is doable. I will not lie to you and say that it is not difficult. It is difficult, and in most cases, as a woman, you are expected to perform 300% more than a man performs. And I think the driving or a propeller for someone like me is to ensure that I will not be the first person to be in the position that I occupy today, but that I will assist through the role that I play to ensure that I bring more women into the space. Let us make an example with a question that you raised in passing. When during the dawn of democracy in 1994, at the then Department of Foreign Affairs, we had about 2% women in the overall department, and most of them were focusing on minute tasks like providing secretariat services to these big men and all that. But if you look from 94, 2% to where we are today, I am happy to inform you that we are a department that is dominated by women who are now doing different things, whether it's admin support or working in our political desk, etc. The point that we are still yet to achieve is ensuring that at the senior level, as well as at the level of ambassadors, we ensure more representation of women. And let me give you figures. At the level of senior management in the department, we have 43% women in senior management positions. And if you look at the level of our ambassadors, it's about 30%. Now, all of these things are the challenges that we face in trying to transform the department. They are huge challenges, but they are not insurmountable. And I believe that with the leadership that we have in the department, both political leadership, but also our admin management, that we can be able to overcome and we can ensure that we improve our representation of women in senior management as well as in the heads of missions level. But I must confess that a lot has been done, but we still have a lot to do in order to comply with the cabinet decision of 1996 of ensuring that we have 50% women represented at senior management and all that. But I must confess that the department is trying very hard to ensure that we achieve those targets.
Absolutely. Charlotte, there might be a young woman listening in today saying, you know what, I'd love to be part of the world of diplomacy. I am aware, in fact, that, you know what, you've got a bifurcated approach, but where there are political appointments and then you also try and cultivate career diplomats. And in fact, that's the bulk of people who should be swelling the ranks in our diplomatic missions across the world. A young person, young woman listening in today, wanting to be part of this, how do they start their career to becoming a diplomat?
Let me start by what you've asked so that we put it in context.
Yeah.
You said something like political appointees as well as what you defined as career diplomats.
Yeah.
I would want us to change that language simply because all heads of missions are appointed by the president, and therefore, technically speaking, they are all,
political appointments.
Mm. The difference is whether or not they are career or non-career diplomats.
Yeah.
And I know that in the media space, this narrative of political appointees versus career diplomats have been sold so much that people now do not understand that all heads of missions are appointed by the president and they serve at the behest of the president. Now, coming to your question about a young woman who is a diplomat wannabe, I would say first and foremost, as Lenin said in one conference of young people, that the task of the youth is to learn.
Mm.
I think first and foremost, let us try to learn as much as we can. And by learning in this context, I would encourage young women and young men to study, particularly study fields that are related to this work that we're talking about today, whether it's international relations, whether it's political science, even other fields, including communication, because in order for the work that we do to be known in the world, we need public diplomacy, and public diplomacy is about us selling the work that we do. So I would encourage young men, young women, to study in the fields that are related to the work that we do. But not only that, there are people who serve in the department who are accountants because our books have to be in order.
Absolutely.
There are people who serve in the department who are serving in the environment of human resource, also because we need to recruit people in a manner that will assist us to further build the kind of a department that we have. So I encourage young people to learn. I encourage them to focus on their books, and when they have graduated, to look at our department. And remember, a department like ours always attracts the best in society, and this is something that we pride ourselves in. If you look at the people who serve as even at the lowest level, level 8, most of them have master's degree. But it is as a result of who we are as the Department of International Relations and Cooperation. We always attract the best, because representing the 57 or 58 million people abroad means that you need to have your sharpest knives in the cupboard to serve in those roles.
Absolutely, Charlotte. And I suppose even within the department, you've got your own processes now once people are in there to initiate them and, you know, orient them on the important work of diplomacy, isn't it?
Indeed, indeed. Remember that our department, we have an in-house international school. We call it Diplomatic Academy. Our Diplomatic Academy, what it does, led by Ambassador Kakato Diseko,
yes,
is responsible for sharpening our diplomats ahead of being posted, but also our own staff members. There are courses that are focusing on just ensuring that we empower our staff members to be better people. Our motto is that we are a learning department, and therefore we use our Diplomatic Academy as much as possible for our staff members to learn as much as they can. So when people come in, obviously there are certain things as part of our process of orientation in ensuring that they understand who we are, they understand issues around protocol and all that. And our current acting, and I know that people will start saying that we are now Hollywood, everyone is acting. Our acting director general has a long history in diplomacy, and she has been our chief state protocol, and her work has always been to try and sharpen all of us to understand protocols around the work that we do. Even on her Facebook page, sometimes she posts on what it looks like to be a diplomat, how we need to behave as diplomats and all that. I am fortunate that I am working with a lot of women in the department who have long history of saving South African people. But I also work with a lot of men who, in my view, I am fortunate that they've embraced gender equality and women's empowerment, and this is seen in how we conduct ourselves as diplomats.
Now, I mean, there have also been efforts to try and organize women in the country and in the continent for purposes of peace and mediation, the Gertrude Schoppe Women Mediators Network. How important is that work? I know there are annual dialogues that you hold, but also interventions that you make from time to time when there are issues that concern, that particular network. How important is the Gertrude Schoppe Women's Mediators Network in the work that you do, as Charlotte?
This is extremely important. As I always say, peace is not the absence of war, but is the presence of peaceful mechanism to resolve conflict. And if we take the situation that we've had in the country in the past few weeks in KwaZulu-Natal and in Gauteng, you know that even though there is no war in South Africa, but we still need peaceful mechanism to resolve conflict that emerges from time to time. Now, the role of the Gertrude Schoppe Women's Mediators Network is to ensure that we utilize the agency of women in communities as pillars of peace, but we also utilize the agency of young people as pillars of peace. We do this first as the department by training women and young people on conflict resolution, mediation, and negotiation. Since 2015, we have trained over 350 women in the country and just about 100 or so women from all over the continent. Now, with this work, we have ensured that not only we build peace in South Africa, but we use our department to build peace in other countries in the continent through this training program. But we notice that if you look at the statistics in the continent, about 52% of your population is made up of women, and 60% of the overall African population is made up of young people. This tells you that the future of the continent is young and female. Hence, part of the work that we do is to also train young people on the same issues that I have referred to, really with a view of ensuring that as we work with women, but we also work with young people. We have training programs in February every year where we take women from all over the continent to training, but we also have a South African specific training that takes place in August. The August training will now take place towards the end of August this year. And ideally, we utilize the fact that women are by nature peace builders. If you look at what Borahadi do, Bodaps in families, the truth be told is that they are this glue that keeps families together. Now, we need to use that agency in building a peace for our country. We have noted that pre-1994, we've had a very good peace in infrastructure in South Africa. But unfortunately, as we our democracy grew, I think some of those structures were disbanded and all that. As an example, you had your street committees and all that, which were some sort of early warning mechanisms for peace building in South Africa. Those structures are no longer there. And from the Gertrude Chopin's women's mediators point of view, we believe that we can still utilize those structures. We can utilize our experience pre-94 in building a South Africa that is at peace with itself.
Okay.
So the role of the mediators network is really to ensure that, amongst others, young people and women are not used as cannon fodder for people who want to destabilize our country, but they are also not used as pocket knives for big men who have issues amongst themselves. We stand as Gertrude Chopin a network in saying Swada. And Swada for us means get out of there.
Yeah.
Lost dying, leave that thing. Choose peace and focus on rebuilding the country.
Let's hold our message. Let's hold it there. Beautiful message. Swada. 0861-987-000 is the dial for you this morning as we are in conversation with the Acting Chief Operations Officer at the Department of International Relations and Cooperation. Please, please do join in on that conversation. But for now, let's go to 11:30 Power News headlines.
Power Talk with Lukhona Mbini. Call Lukhona on 0861-987-000.
Indeed, please do so. 25 minutes to the hour, 12 o'clock. Our time is almost up here on Power Talk, but we continue with this conversation with Charlotte Lobby, Acting Chief Operations Officer at DERCO. That's the Department of International Relations and Cooperation. We will be doing that quickfire questionnaire with her at some point soon, but I invite you to the conversation on 0861-987-000. I see some of your tweets that I'll put to her as we go about on this conversation. Before I go to that line, now, Charlotte, I mean, for you coming from my good friend and good friend to you, Tsidiso Mhlomi, would call the streets of Botshabelo. I mean, how has your journey been, and how much affirmation can you give? And I'm not doing the, you know, from dregs to riches type of narrative, but honestly, I think it is important sometimes to remember where we come from and the journey that we have had throughout life, and you know, the stumbling blocks one has met, but also the moments that have propelled you and continued to hold you safe and steady in the road that you have been on until this point where you find yourself at this point of responsibility within DERCO.
Well, Lukhona, I am a social and political activist from the dusty streets of Botshabelo.
I didn't want to say dusty myself. Thank you, you said it yourself.
I grew up there, and I think growing up in Botshabelo is what has shaped my character. I always say we are sometimes defined by the environments that we come from. I am because I am from Botstown, and I'm very proud of that fact. As you are aware, in my past, I have a very colorful political history. I have been provincial secretary of the ANC. I have been the secretary general of the Congress of the People. And I am not ashamed of any part of my past because I am who I am today because I went through what I have gone through. This is my journey, and I own every part of the journey of Charlotte Lobi on this earthly vessel. Now, you would know that after I left the ANC, I joined COPE, and after COPE, I went back to the ANC because I had realized that, you know what, I cannot want to fight something that I'm not part of. If I'm not happy with how things turn out in the ANC, it's up to me as an activist of many years to go back and do what I think is best for the movement. So I'm back as in the ANC as an ordinary member of the ANC because there's something that I am unable to divorce in me and is being an activist.
And find some political belonging. And in your return, as Charlotte, you've sort of shied away from participating in the political structures. Do you think that that is not serving the ANC well for some people like yourself to opt not to serve anymore in, you know, prominent structures? If you look at the PEC situation in your home province there in the Free State, where recently it has had to be disbanded because of the court outcome, it seems as if the politics are no longer as you were when you were provincial secretary. Something is going wrong. Who is then going to fix this ailing organization at an organizational level if a number of you are now part of, you know, the state machinery and not necessarily the structures and building the movement?
Well, I believe that the ANC has a lot of advanced cadres who can carry on leading the ANC in elected position. I am also of a view that you don't have to be elected to lead because you can lead without being elected. You can lead by providing service to your people, by providing service to the elected leaders and supporting them in their different roles. For instance, this coming Thursday, I have been asked by the interim provincial committee to come back to the Free State after hours when I'm done with DECO work, to come and talk to them on our solidarity work. And the focus of that talk is really about solidarity with the people of Palestine and solidarity with the people of Western Sahara. So I may not be in an elected position, but I cannot run away from providing leadership whenever I am required to do so. I have full confidence in the people who have been selected to serve in the interim leadership. Yeah. And I believe that they are trying their level best to unite the different groupings in the province with a view of building a Free State that can be a force to be reckoned with. I think the Free State has gone through a very unfortunate state in the past few years, and I think that started in my times or just before I resigned as this provincial secretary, and I think we allowed the situation to continue for far too long to where the province is at today. But I believe that the efforts of the leadership of Comrade Nkosi Dukwana and Mayor Sisi Ntombela and others will be able to bring everyone together with a view of renewing and building the organization.
Is there anything that concerns you about the future of our political landscape as a country generally?
Well, the one thing that concerns me about the future of our political landscape is what I mentioned on peace-related matters. Is for ordinary people to be used as cannon fodder or as pocket knives of people who have issues, and as a result, they are used as some sort of what I can call the instrument that destabilizes our country. That is something that I am really concerned about. I am concerned about us renewing in the true sense of it. I am yet to really see the new dawn. And by saying that, I mean that I would want to see a situation wherein people who are involved in corrupt deeds are brought to book. And I'm going to make an example without saying people's names and say that if there is any corrupt practice that is associated, for instance, with the dairy farm in Vrede, that any person who is involved, who was involved in that, must be brought to book, and anyone who might have acted in manners that contravenes the constitution must be brought to book. The same way with the asbestos story. You know, the painful thing about asbestos
yeah.
is that the reason government took a decision for those houses, those roofs to be removed, was because of the health implications of asbestos on the poor people whose houses are the roof is made up of asbestos. Now, the continued non-action around the people who might have been involved in this. I know you are going to say the court cases and all that, which I appreciate, but it took long for these matters to be addressed. In my view, people in the Free State committed acts of corruption with impunity because they felt that nothing was going to happen to them. And the new dawn for the Free State people has to ensure that all of these elements are brought to book, irrespective of their position in society. And I'm going to make an example with Singapore. I visited Singapore about 2 years ago as part of a DECO delegation. One of the things that they said to us, and they did not only say, but they showed us some very good examples on how they dealt with elements of corruption in their own country, is to deal with the men at the top. Because if you are going to deal with these ordinary people who were instructed to do this or not to do that, and not deal with the actual person who is the one that has been corrupting the system, then you are not going to succeed in the work that you do. So for me, from where I stand, and this is a personal thing, it has got nothing to do with DECO, I cannot stop to be a Free Stater. I cannot stop to put the interest of the Free State at heart. I cannot keep quiet when things do not go right in my own province.
And you remain
this is the province where I was born, and I will work every day of my life for the province to go back to its original glory.
Absolutely, and you continue to be very vocal on matters there. Let's go on that line, 0861-987-000, where you can join me in this conversation with the Acting Chief Operations Officer at the Department of International Relations and Cooperation, Aus Charlotte Lobby. Tsepo, good morning.
Good morning, Lukona, and let me also greet Ms. Charlotte. Firstly, let me also say that thanks very much for the for Power FM to bring such issues on radio. And let me go directly. I've got just quickly about two or three issues I want to just put to Ma'am Charlotte. Firstly is the issue of the national interest, because she indicated that you know, South Africa is pursuing its national interest in the world. Is there where this is articulated, meaning what is South Africa's national interest, if you can take us through that, so that at least we are all, The other matter I want to raise is on the South African Council on International Relations. I know that this council was established to make sure that there is a closer working relationship between government, business, and civil society, if you mind. And since the first term of the council that was appointed, there's nothing that has happened. What has been the reason for that? Thirdly, is the issue on cultural diplomacy. I do know for a fact that you've got countries that have settled in South Africa for over 60 years pursuing their cultural diplomacy, which Mam Lobe would know that it's advancing soft power to be able to achieve other diplomatic intentions. Why is it that 27 years later, South Africa does not have even a paragraph on cultural diplomacy? And if it is, what is it that is done? Because I stand in a position of understanding that there's no document that articulates cultural diplomacy.
Okay. Lastly, Sebo, no, you said two issues. You said two issues. Now you are going on four, and I've
got Matume
on the line. So make it snappy, Tsepo.
The rationalization of South African missions abroad. I know there's a process that is unfolding. What are the fundamental reasons for that, if she can help us understand that? Thank you very much.
Well, okay, Tsepo, I'm sure Minister Titombaweni will say, I'm the reason. Matume, good morning.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, how are you?
Okay, thanks. I'm saying with Charlotte, the problem with people with who are loyal to the ANC, not to the country, is that they always quote cases from the one faction. I appreciate the fact that he's quoting from the dairy farm and anything and everything. That is good, well and good. Mm. But he should also quote cases that we are experiencing now in with the Minister of Health, with the one that disappeared in the Gauteng Department of Education, the 430 million. Mm. And also, just quote all the shenanigans that are happening. I mean, if we have somebody that is intelligent like Zizi Kotwa and is always being followed by that, what sort of intelligence do you have? Nothing. Right. So when they're quoting cases, if he says he's honest, you must be honest to and be loyal to the country, not to the other faction of the party. Then we'll follow you.
Well, Matume, she did say, though, she's loyal to the Free State. So I suppose that's where she was having her most focus. But anyway, I take your point and I'll put that question to her. 0861-987-000 is the dial for you this morning to join this conversation. And Charlotte, I'll give you a tweet that I have received as well from Pumla, who says, your guest is selling us dreams, Inje. When was the last time Deco advertised any vacancies? And in relation to that, somebody almost intimating that opportunities in the diplomatic circles sort of circulate within the same circles. But your responses to those sentiments shared, Charlotte?
Let me start with the one that says I'm selling them dreams, Pumla.
Yeah.
The last time Deco advertised post was last month. We are looking for chief director and director property management. Mm. And the reason for this, you will note that in accordance with the now Foreign Service Act, Deco is now required to take responsibility of South Africa's properties abroad. So
yes,
obviously from just the point that we advertised last month, the dreams issue falls off, and Pumla will now go back and check when last Deco advertised posts. The second one relates to an issue that you already responded to. I was speaking on that point, and hence I said I'm speaking as a Free Stater.
Yeah.
And I was speaking about the Free State, and you wanted to understand my concern, and I told you my concern, part of them is about the Free State, and hence I particularly focused on the Free State. The other issue that was raised relates to, and you'll remind me others, the other one relates to our national interest, whether there's
yes,
a document.
And where that is expressed, yes.
Yes. Now I can report that Cabinet is considering a document on national interest if it has already not approved, but that work has been completed from the side of Deco, and I believe Cabinet will soon make a pronouncement on the South African national interest document, but the work has been completed. What the document focuses on is what informs South Africa's national interest, but also
yeah,
look at the genesis of these two words, national interest, where they come from, what they mean, and what do they also mean for South Africa as a democracy. Part of what our national interest document tells us is that South Africa can never be seen as part of countries that promote narrow nationalism, that our interest as South Africa are interlinked to interest of the continent, but also the interest of the people of the world.
Mm.
So in the work that we do as part of our national interest, we need to promote the whole notion of Ubuntu, wherein we affirm our humanity by affirming humanity of others. What we want for South Africans is what we want for the continent, is what we want for the people of the world. And really, that is what our national interest document, the summary of what our national interest document focuses on. And if we were to follow the logic of how we then operate, it means that as much as our focus is building a better South Africa, but we have an obligation of building a better Africa and building a better world, with a view that South Africa is not an island on its own. In order for us to succeed, we need the continent, we need the people of the world. So I'll leave the one on national
And then on the SA Council on IR, government, business, civil society, sort of suggesting that not much has been achieved on that front by the council.
Well, I take the point that has been raised on that point, and of course I'll take it back to the department on the National Council on International Relations. I have listened to what has been raised at this point, and just to say that even though publicly you may not see that the council is operating, but in terms of operations, there's a lot of work that happens because every process that we go through as the department, part of the things that we do and we are proud of this work is engaging civil society, engaging other government departments and agencies, and the spirit that we carry is the same spirit of the National Council, but I take the point that has been raised.
Absolutely. Something on cultural diplomacy as a form
Cultural diplomacy. I always caution people against, ghettoizing diplomacy. And by ghettoizing diplomacy, today you'll say economic diplomacy, tomorrow you say cultural diplomacy, you'll say political diplomacy and all that. Diplomacy as a whole, as part of even the document that I've referred to as our national interest document, means that as South Africa engages with other countries, through various mechanisms, whether it's through people-to-people mechanisms, which of course affirms issues of cultural diplomacy, whether it's about us engaging other states on issues of trade and investment promotions, it's all about diplomacy and it's all about what we are as a department.
But to be fair on SEPO, politicians do use this term, saying that this is an advancement of cultural diplomacy. I know when we started off, for example, talking about Mandarin being part of the languages that can be explored in our country, the proponents of that within cabinet themselves were calling it a flavor of cultural diplomacy.
I agree with you, Holly. That's why I said we should not ghettoize diplomacy. It's me saying don't ghettoize diplomacy. Because what would then be the role of, for instance, our mission in, in Brazil?
Yeah.
Do you now expect them to say, this is what we're going to do on cultural diplomacy, this is what we're going to do on political diplomacy, this is what we're going to do on cultural diplomacy? All I'm saying is that as part of our international relations mechanisms, we must be conscious of the fact that diplomacy means that we engage at various levels on various issues. At the end of all of these issues, it's about us ensuring that we promote the national interest of South Africa. For instance, now there's a language of vaccine diplomacy.
Yes.
I know something is going to happen in 2030, and then you have something diplomacy. All I am trying to say to us is that diplomacy is diplomacy. It's about us ensuring our footprint. It's also about us engaging with other countries, whether through established state protocols or through people-to-people mechanisms that, of course, will include issues of culture.
Okay. I'll shout out quickly because I want to now go to the quick-fire questions before we run out of time. Rationalization of foreign missions, I know it's part of budget problems, or is there another story to that?
Well, you already answered the question. The rationalization of missions is about us ensuring that we do more with less. We are required to do this as a result of the economic conditions that we operate in, but we are also required to do this as a result of now our situation with that relates to even COVID and related issues. Now, you will know that the first speech of Minister Mboweni, he gave directive to the Department of International Relations and Cooperation to consider, amongst others, rationalizing missions and also looking at best practices elsewhere. If you look at Egypt, for example, you'll realize that they don't have as many missions as we have in South Africa, but they are as effective as we are. So as much as you rationalize mission, you also put into place mechanisms that would ensure that South Africa still serves, or DECO still serves its mandate, even in areas where we do not have representation.
Okay.
For instance, I'll make an example. Just the last example, we don't have a mission, for instance, in the Gambia.
Yes.
But in the Gambia, we have an honorary consulate, and their work assists us in ensuring that we have presence, but also to deal with consular-related matters.
Sis Charlotte, now I'm going to do quick-fire questions, not long answers. Don't think too hard about them. Just fire a response to me, and I fire the next question to you. If you were to be president, who would you choose to appoint as your deputy president?
Minister Pandu.
What song or album are you currently playing or listening to in your car or music playlist?
I'm not in my car now, but I usually listen to hymns. They keep my spirit high.
Any particular denomination?
Well, I am a fan of Joyous Celebration, and I believe I'm also promoting them through this work.
If you were not doing the work you are doing now, what would you be doing?
You know, my dream was to be a fashion model. I always put this on my Facebook page.
Mm.
But my sister Gertrude Mutupi, she abused me so much that I even have not thought about it. You know, I've written about it lengthy.
Yeah.
She told me that beauty is only skin deep. When I'm old, I won't be having a job, so I needed to rethink. So ordinarily, I would wanted to be a fashion model, but Naked Rubani was my big role model, as well as Marcia Tena, but Gertrude Mutupi happened.
And give us a quote that you live by.
Well, I live by so many codes.
One that stands
out. This month, I'm going to share a part of a quote that people love from Charlotte Makweke. She says, "Kill the spirit of self."
Mm.
And that is what I live by. And the work I do in the department, the work I do as part of the mediators network, the work I do in my church, in communities, is to try and kill the spirit of self.
And if you were to, if what is the one thing that you say you will do but you never do?
The one thing that I always say I'll do and I never get to do it is to take my family to a holiday in Durban. I've done so many things, but Durban has not been part of it.
Wow.
But now I'm reconsidering now, but I know that will overcome and I'll take them to Durban sometime.
Absolutely. And if you could instantly become an expert in something, what would that be?
Politics.
Political expert. And what's your biggest fear?
My biggest fear, and my friends are going to laugh, is to be in a foreign country and I'm chased by a dog and I'm saying Fusek and the dog don't understand what Fusek means. That is my greatest fear.
As Charlotte, thank you so much for your time this morning. Absolutely enjoyed being in conversation with you, and best wishes with what you keep on doing there, DECO.
Thank you very much, Lukona.
Thank you so much. That's Acting Chief Operations Officer Charlotte Lobby there at the Department of International Relations and Cooperation. Our first, Power Women conversation this month. And we'll bring you more of these conversations, people of power, just to make sure that we get to know as many more people this Women's Month, women who are doing brilliant things, amazing things in their day-to-day work.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.